Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and so I watch them so that you don't have to. And I felt like we've been having a little too much fun lately.
Sammy.
That is not okay.
Sammy.
So we got a not fun one today.
Oh, man. Darn.
And yet I'm excited about
it. She has a huge goddamn grin on her face. This girl is elated.
Oh, I really am. But if you want to get straight to the recap of this week's movie, you can navigate using the timestamps in the show notes. Because before we get into it, I want to know, did anything scary happen to you guys this week?
Henley, you've got a little grin on your face. Did something scary happen to you this week?
Okay, I watched the show. I didn't finish it. I actually couldn't finish it. I read spoilers instead. I watched One Day on Netflix. Have you guys seeing this?
Oh, it is definitely being heavily promoted.
I don't know anything about this. Why is it not being promoted to me? I feel left out.
So it's based off of a book written by David Nichols, and then Anne Hathaway made a movie about it that was apparently very bad.
Is it the guy from White Lotus?
Yes.
Leo's, okay, now we're talking.
Woodell?
Yes. Okay.
New actress. I've never seen her in anything. Ambika. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Maud.
Is the premise that it takes place over like 20 years and it's just those same two actors?
Yes.
God, it's funny when they do that. Oh, I really think it's so funny.
Oh, man. Okay, so do you guys know anything about it?
No.
It is so upsetting.
Oh, no.
It's so sad.
What?
Oh. That is not the vibe I was getting from the trailers.
Same.
Looks like a rom-com.
It is. It's kind of a rom. Well, that's part of the reason why it's a rom.
Rom-no-com.
It's a rom-no-com. That's part of what makes it so sad is that they lull you into feeling like you're safe.
Oh, no.
But you are not. And essentially, the conceit is that, yes, you're following these two characters who meet the last day of school in Edinburgh. And for one day, for the next 20 years, you see like the course of their relationship and their lives. And it's such an easy binge watch because the episodes are only between like 20 and 30 minutes. A lot of them are only like 22 anymore. Minutes long. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you immediately want to watch the next one because the next one is a year later. So you're like, where the fuck are they a year later? Like you're immediately, you want to know.
But I'm thinking, how'd they age these actors up in 1 year increments? Like I'm fascinated.
You know, it wasn't that. That's a really good question. I would love a deep dive with the, you know, costume and makeup people on how they thought about that. But it's a drastic age change in some ways, but in other ways, it's not really.
What are they? How younger when they start? How?
I think that they're like, I don't think it's a full 20 years. I think they're probably like 22 to 38 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
You know? And yeah. So they make them look young at 22. Like she has completely different hair and terrible style, and they basically make her more put together as she gets older.
That's realistic.
Yeah. But the fucking you guys, I didn't watch the final episode because I kept reading these headlines that was like gut-wrenching new series, or
you will want to die after.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so I was like, fuck, I don't think I can do it. So then I just read spoilers and I know what happens. And I was like, okay, it's fine. I can watch it. So I was like watching it and then I would like turn it off. And then I would turn it back on and be like, Henley, just fucking watch it. You know what's going to happen. Just let it happen. And then I would turn it off. Oh, so I still haven't seen the end. But Leo Waddell, is that how you say his name? He is dreamy. I like have a crush on him now.
Is he British in it?
Yeah, he's British. He's really cute. And I don't get like crushes on actors a lot. So it was nice to feel that
way.
Must
be nice.
Yeah, I can't relate to that at all. I think I get a crush on every single actor I've ever seen on screen. Every single one.
It's a huge problem for me.
I just don't. I wish that I did because it makes watching things so much more fun. He kind of is despicable in this series in a lot of ways. So you're not completely in love with him, but he's really cute. And the first episode, he's in a tux the whole time. And sometimes men just look good in a tux, a little undone tux. Oh, can do a lot. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot for a man. Anyway, I recommend it if you want to feel.
Yeah,
shattered.
I'm interested.
Now,
I was
now
not...
you're more interested. I'm less interested.
I know you've convinced me. Sad, feel bad.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Yeah,
that's my kind of show.
And it's a quick watch, you know. Yeah. And it's pretty immediately entertaining. So
I'm actually looking for a show to watch for the whole rest of the day after we finish recording.
Yeah.
So
here you go.
I did a similar thing recently where I was watching a show and a character died in it in like a way that I was like, I really found it very upsetting. It was like a, you know, tangential character, but like I really hated it. And I had to like keep telling myself like this wasn't real. He didn't really die. He wasn't a real person. Like, it's really hard sometimes.
I know. But then you want it to be real. But I was also I love it when I love a show, you know, for those glorious
feeling.
Glorious 36 hours when I still had this show in my life. Oh, it's so exciting to sit down and know I had a show.
Yeah,
I was
still
looking forward to watching
it. Is really nice.
Feels good. Really feels good.
It really does.
What about you guys? How are your weeks?
Well, I wrapped up my job. I had my last day on Friday.
Woohoo!
And I have a whole week off. And I guess what's scary is I'm already like, I don't have any time to do anything. Like I've started to think about what I had all these thoughts of, here's what I'm going to do in my week off. Wow. I'm going to do this project. I'm going to do these alterations. I'm going to go to this store, that store. And I'm immediately like, all my time is gone. I don't. Mm-hmm. I last night I drove Sammy home. Sammy and Joel and I were all at a friend's house, and I drove Sammy home, which meant I had to make space in the back of my car, and was immediately like, oh my God, I have, my car is full of shit I've been meaning to do for literally months. Clothes mm-hmm. that need to be donated, packages that need to be returned. And I'm like, the week is already gone. The week is already gone. I won't have any time to do anything. It won't be relaxing at all. How do you, like, it's just because I haven't had time to live my life. And all of a sudden I'm like, I have to get everything done this week, so I'll never have time again, because then I'm going to start another job.
Emily, you're really speaking my language, because as you know, I have not had a full-time job in months now, possibly approaching the year mark. No, it's not quite that long, but I still have that feeling. I'm still like catching up with stuff.
What the hell?
It's a very interesting thing that happens in your brain, where when you have important things to do, like you have children or you have a job, that is just the priority. And
yeah, you don't have
the other things get filed to a lesser importance level, and you don't stress about those things. But once you don't have those things to focus on, then those lower tier things become extremely anxiety inducing, and those become the main focus.
They're all the same. They're all important.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to prioritize. This is really resonating with me, because I'll have like a free hour or two, and all of a sudden I'll be like, oh, what do I do with my hour? Like, it's like, it feels like an avalanche of things. Mm-hmm. And I am paralyzed and just sit and look at my phone and don't accomplish any of it.
Yeah. It's, I'm like, I woke up this morning, I like was laying in bed, and that thing in the morning where it's like you're trying to go back to sleep, but then you can't really go back. And I just started thinking about all the things I needed to do, and when was I going to do them, and was immediately like, well, I guess this week off is already full of tasks, and it's not going to be any fun. And that's not true. I am going to relax. Joel and I are going to Madonna Inn. That is like required relaxation time. I can't do my errands while I'm at Madonna Inn. So that was a good choice.
Good.
And I'm grateful for the week off, but it is, all of a sudden was like, I still have stuff to do. And this feeling of like, you're never going to get this opportunity again. When are you ever going to get a whole week off without jobs, you know, between, you know, it's like, so it also feels like you better get all the projects done that you have been waiting to do, because this is your one shot. Ugh. So
this is giving me anxiety.
Me too. Wait, you need to time block your days. Monday and Tuesday are task days, and you just like fucking do it all.
Yeah. I'm gonna make some lists. I love to make a list.
I have an app that's just called Calendar.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That I prefer, or it's called Calendars, excuse me.
Thank you.
And I do pay for it, but it's cheap, and I prefer it to Google's layout. It just
I'm gonna look into this
for me, and you can add tasks, and I literally put everything in a calendar, because the smallest things like doing dishes or what, I'm like, it's in the calendar, because
I love that.
Then I can stress about it less, because I spend every Monday planning out my whole week. That's like the first thing I do Monday morning. And so then I don't have to stress anymore. And I'm like, well, the whole week's planned out now. And so I don't have to feel like I have to do everything at once, because now I've scheduled that laundry's on Thursday. So I don't have to like freak out about it.
That is very healthy. I think I need to that's going to be a goal as I move into this next job, is get like having a better plan and letting, because it is relaxing to like know when things are happening. One of my coworkers, as a gift, leaving gift, got me a planning journal, which I do love. I do love a planner. God, I love a planner. So maybe today I'm going to take a look at that planner, and I'm going to write some things down.
Yeah, it just it lessens the stress when you can put it down on paper and just be like, well, I don't have to worry about it right now, because
that's what I did when I was in school, but I haven't lived that way. You know what I mean? But like that's why you have like little planners when you're in school, because you have to be like, well, I'm going to do this class's work from this to this time, but then I have to do this class's. And we can think about life that way. You know, we can think about life that way.
Mm. I simply have to. It is not an option for me to not have that, because otherwise I have this feeling of avalanche like we're describing. If I don't put everything on paper in designated time slots, then it feels like it all needs to happen right now.
Oh, God.
Oh, you guys, I did this. I put everything into time slots.
It didn't work.
And well, your children don't know what your time slots are.
Oh, yeah, I feel like that's the problem there.
I like spent so much time doing it. I was like, this is exactly how I'm going to spend my days, blah, blah, blah. You better believe I haven't fucking done one thing in one of those time slots. Like, not once.
Well, how could you possibly?
Instead, I live off of these little, my mother-in-law actually got me this like pile of paper that I keep on my desk.
A pile of paper, very sweet.
And I literally like just write on these little pieces of paper.
I do love post-its.
That's the only way I can. I have to do it like within like a certain time period. If I do it too far in advance, I'm not looking at this again.
Yeah.
Never looking at this again.
No, honestly, this was really helpful for me. This was helpful for me.
Okay, good.
Piles of paper.
I'll send you this app.
Apps.
Calendars.
We all need little systems in place, you know? And Henley, mm-hmm. I think a big part of it is just like, even if the plan goes awry, I think there's something to setting the plan.
Trying to be intentional.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. Because,
yes.
Yeah, if I had a toddler in control of my day, like, they're chaos machines. Like, they don't fucking know what is on the paper.
Yeah. Sass is a chaos machine. And so is May. They're both chaos machines.
Ugh. Cute, though.
They're fucking cute.
Sammy?
All right, Sammy, let's do it. Let's just tell
you
us.
I gotta hear your scary thing.
Oh, my God, we haven't done
Twitter.
Sorry.
Really excited to
get to the bad feeling time.
My scary thing's not actually scary. It's more of a plug. I guess it's a little scary. I have a documentary series that I worked on coming out on March 5th on Netflix. So it's a little scary to create something and put it into the world.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The show is called The Program, Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping. It is about the troubled teen industry. It is not a fun watch. But I am very proud of it, and I am excited that it's finally coming out because I actually finished working on it about a year ago, and I don't know why it took this long, but who knows, but it's finally coming out, and I'm excited for people to see it.
It's really important. It's really important. I think that not enough people know that this industry exists, and
oh, it's so, so wild.
It's so destructive.
It's going to be a feel bad for sure.
It's feel bad, but yes, these places still exist. I feel like a point of reference that some people may know is that Paris Hilton was in one of these programs. She was in one that's the same company that we focus on in this documentary series. We're focusing on a company called WASP. It's the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programming. Ooh, that might not be correct, but something like that. And that they're basically the umbrella company that started all these programs in different states that are just privately run. Nobody is accredited with any like professional degrees. The teachers are not teachers, the counselors have no licenses. Like, they're basically just people hired from the community and given like pamphlets of how to do jobs that they are in no way qualified for. And because they are privately run, there's no oversight. There's no rules or regulations that they have to follow. These places are perfect places for child abuse to happen, and that's kind of worked into some of the language of the way that they run the programs, because they use the fact that teens are being sent there because they're in a rebellious, problematic stage of their, you know, life. And so then they tell you, oh, your kids are liars, your kids are manipulators, they're going to say that, you know, bad things are happening here, don't believe them. And yeah, it's really devastating. And they were extremely popular in the early 2000s, and they're, you know, less popular today, but they still exist. And Yeah. So I hope people will check it out. It's called The Program, Netflix, March 5th. And, you know, just watch with caution. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I hope people watch.
Yeah, because a big part of it is that parents didn't know exactly what they were sending their kids into. I think parents, not all of them, but some parents were doing like all the best intentions, thinking that they were doing the best thing they could for their kid.
Yeah. When,
and the places are like propaganda machines.
Yeah. It was at a time when there was a lot of focus on tough love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. It's oof.
I know. Well, proud of you, Sammy.
Thank you, Henley.
You're amazing.
Thank you. And now, without further ado, Henley, we can talk about this week's movie.
Okay.
Which is Eden Lake. Came out in 2008. Written and directed by James Watkins, starring Kelly Riley, Michael Fassbender, and Jack O'Connell. And it is streaming on Freevee.
Freevee!
Freevee! Freevee keeps coming up in my life. There's something else that was on Freevee that I was trying to watch.
Jury Duty?
No, I can't remember what it was.
I've never heard of this movie.
Me either.
No?
No.
I had definitely heard of it. In my brain, it was kind of lumped into a torture porny time.
No.
I wouldn't call it torture porn, but it's 2008, you know? This was...
Yeah, we were still in the
time for it. This is a British film, and so I don't know. It was like living in the same place in my mind as like Inside and High Tension, even though those are French films. But I think it's roughly the same time.
Did you like it, Sammy?
I did like it, yes.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Don't let that soothe you, Henley.
You know, I remember kind of enjoying High Tension.
Yeah.
I liked High Tension.
I liked High Tension as well.
I'm going to love this one.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. I think maybe we're in for a treat. Maybe. Eden Lake has an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, 65% on Metacritic, and a 6.7 on IMDb.
Standard
budget was $2 million. It made $4 million.
Okay, so you know,
doubled its
money. It's nothing to sneeze at. And I couldn't really find much trivia about it other than this is James Watkins's directorial debut. This movie's a crisp 91 minutes.
Ooh,
and it's like I said, a British film filmed in England.
Great.
That's all I got. I'll sprinkle some more trivia in throughout, but...
Okay, great.
I think... Let's just get into this recap. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they're feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? This is such a treat, and usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family friendly, low carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready to eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary and use code too scary for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code too scary so they know I sent you.
All right, you guys, I'm here again to talk to you about Skims, except this time not about their underwear, this time about their t-shirts. Have you guys tried their t-shirts? Because I hadn't until recently, and holy shit, I have been on the quest to find the perfect t-shirt for my entire adult life. And little did I know, they were just hiding at skims.com. So I have their cotton jersey long sleeve t-shirt in kind of this like deep blue, gorgeous color. And it's a very form-fitting t-shirt that's extremely flattering. I've worn it over and over and over again since I got it. And it really holds up in the wash. You can just throw it in the washing machine, holds up, keeps its shape. The quality of the fabric is so good. I also have the boyfriend t-shirt. That one's so cozy, more relaxed. I just am obsessed with them. And now I want all of them. So I will slowly be amassing my collection of Skims t-shirts for the rest of my goddamn life. Anyway, so I really can't recommend them enough. Go to skims.com to shop them. And they're available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. Plus, you get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that Too Scary Didn't Watch sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select Too Scary Didn't Watch in the drop-down menu that follows.
My mom has had a pretty wild life, a lot of interesting stuff. She was in a couple popular bands in South Africa in the 80s. She's traveled all around the world, and she is so full of stories that I'm still finding out new things about her. So this Mother's Day, I know just what to get her. It's called Storyworth, and Storyworth helps you preserve those memories and stories from your mom or mother figure for years to come. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a question. You can help choose the questions if you'd like. Some that I've asked my mom are, what was your first boss like? What were your favorite toys as a child? And all they need to do is respond to the email with a story. It can be long or short. They can even include pictures if they want. Sky's the limit. So you can enjoy their retelling of your favorite stories and new stories you've never heard before. After a year, Storyworth compiles all their stories into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. I love this. I love having these kinds of physical items, whether it's a journal or a photo book. I know we can have all this stuff on our phones now or the computer, but it's just not the same. Having something actually tangible is just the best. So give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/too scary. That's storyworth.com/too scary to save $10 on your first purchase.
The seasons are changing. We are starting to have warm days in Los Angeles. And if you're like me, every time the seasons change, I realize I actually hate every single thing I own and need to swap everything out. And that is a daunting task, but imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50 for those places where it is still chilly, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, yes, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, so you can feel great about the items that you are purchasing. For example, I purchased a pair of clogs. They are so comfortable. I have lusted after a pair of suede clogs for so long. They're pricey other places, and I just could never justify it for shoes that I'm basically treating like outdoor slippers. And I got a pair at Quince. They are amazing. I truly love them. So if you too would like to be walking around in gorgeous pieces that make you feel happy and comfortable at a price that you can feel good about, go to Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/too scary for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/too scary to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/too scary.
Okay, so I'm going to start by bragging that immediately this music, the music that starts our opening scene, I said, that sounds like the music from The Descent. Looked it up, same composer. I know the music to The Descent so well. But
loves her horror soundtracks.
To be fair, it genuinely sounds at times like they just used the score from The Descent. Like it's almost exactly the same. So we are seeing our protagonist. Her name is Jenny Greengrass.
Oh.
Little on the nose there. Nothing could be bad in Jenny Greengrass's life.
That's really funny.
She is a teacher teaching a class full of young students, and class is out for the weekend. It's the end of the school day. Her boyfriend, Steve, is picking her up for a romantic weekend getaway. This is Michael Fassbender.
Hard for me to see him as a guy named Steve. I don't know why.
I agree.
Anyway.
Which is funny because Michael is a standard name as well. Michael,
yeah,
and
Michael
Steve
is
are
Steve
the same.
Adjacent, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But Steve is, maybe it's just the V.
Maybe.
The V is throwing me.
Yeah, it's not right. It doesn't match.
It doesn't sort of fit. So was that a relevant point to bring up?
I mean,
let's keep it on this topic. Let's stay here.
Let's explore this further.
Other letters might be strange for his fate.
Steve, yeah. There's a TikTok trend, I will say, where people go on and say, what do you think my name is? And people comment, and then they reveal what their real name is. And then they have people rename them for what? Yes, yes. And it's actually really fun to see.
I'm into this. I like when Joel and I take walks around the reservoir and we pass dogs, we have to name
guess the
dog.
Name.
Yeah.
Pongo.
And
all of them are named Pongo.
Pongo's, you know what? We've never named a Pongo, but I really do like that.
Yeah, that's nice.
So I get it. And I like this trend.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we're going to go with Steve.
Yeah, unfortunately, his name in this is Steve. And before she gets into the car, we see that Steve has an engagement ring. So he's planning to pop the question on this romantic weekend. She gets in the car. They are clearly very much in love. And they're headed out to Eden Lake for the weekend. They stop at a hotel on the way. And they're seeing the clientele at the hotel are a little like, here, let's get some historical context here. So,
okay.
I looked into this. There was a term used in this around this time in Britain, from like 2007 to 2010, the Conservative Party used the term Broken Britain a lot to describe a perceived widespread state of social decay under the Labour Party Prime Minister Gordon Brown. So just kind of a political thing that was happening is that they were like saying, oh, this, you know, country's like going to shit, Broken Britain. And this was also a time of chavs. Have you guys heard of the term chavs?
No.
It's like, I feel like it was kind of Britain's version of Jersey Shore type of vibe.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's an offensive word that was used to describe like essentially poor people. It's like working class Brits.
Uh-huh. Like almost like when we say like white trash, like that kind of vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so the chavs would wear. Oh, and it's also chav. I don't know if this is actually how the name originated. There's like a few different ways that this term could have originated, but it's often referred to as an acronym for council housed and violent. So it's like people that live in public housing and...
Oh, Lord.
So it's this like demonization of poor people as violent criminals. Mm. And this is just something that was, I think, in the media a lot at this time.
Brits, never, they're just never like
again.
Us.
I was going to say never again, and we have no idea what that's like. So we're seeing at this hotel, some of the other people staying there seem to be of the Chav variety and like poorer people. There's a kid that's really screaming, and Steve says he's about to say that looks like this kid could use a slap. You can like tell that that's what he's about to say. But before he can even say it, the mom slaps the kid. And and then they're like, So, and these people are drinking and like yelling at each other, and they look like a little, Steve and Jenny look a little out of place here. And she's saying like, are you sure Eden Lake is like a nice getaway? And he's like, yeah, he's familiar with it from his childhood. He's like, at least like it used to be beautiful. You're going to love it. I swear once we get there, you're going to love it. It's gorgeous. So we continue on the next day and make it to the lake. And it is very beautiful. And as they're walking through this forest, it's pretty remote. And they have to walk through this forest to get to the lake. And they pass by a little kid named Adam, who's a little quiet and strange. And they're Jenny's trying to, I don't know, just talk to him because she's a teacher and she loves kids, but he's being very standoffish. So they
Does he have a tongue?
Great question. He does have a tongue.
Oh, already. Already this movie is great. I love it.
We'll see if he keeps his tongue.
Oh, God.
So remember that everybody had tongues at the beginning of the movie you're referring to? Oh, no, they didn't. They didn't.
Not everybody. Okay, not everybody.
Not everybody did. You're right.
Not everybody.
Okay, so they set up their towels and cooler picnic, whatever, by the lake, seeming like they're having a nice time. Everything's actually turning out pretty well. Until a group of teens, sets up next to them, and genuinely, teenagers really are horrible. They're horrible, so bad.
Yeah, they're really, even the best of them are so bad. There's just nothing to be done,
and it's horrible to be a teenager,
especially in packs. You get like two teens together and
I think I talked about this already on the podcast, but when I went to see Godzilla Minus One, there was a row of teenagers behind me just being so fucking obnoxious, and someone told them to be quiet, and I'm like, you can't do that.
You cannot talk to teens.
It's
that's the thing about teens, a losing battle here.
They like it when they make you mad.
They are impenetrable. Like there's no defense against a group of teens.
No.
And they know it. They fucking know it.
Wait, did I tell you guys about what the 4th of July party I saw in Long Beach? Did I tell you guys about this?
No.
So in Alamitos Bay in Long Beach, there's a teen party that happens every year during the daytime.
Oh, boy.
And I've never seen this many. So Tim's family goes there every year, and it's usually very peaceful. It's on the bay. There are lots of children because there are no waves, whatever. 4th of July, the teens come out in an actual pack, and it was insane. It was like 2 p.m. Like you couldn't see the sand. There were so many teens. There were so many fucking teens. And the craziest part was that there was a Long Beach police boat, like a ship. It was all gray, like looked like it was about to go into battle, just bobbing right in front of the teens.
Clearly,
they're all drinking, smoking, doing whatever the fuck they're doing, like raging, blaring music. Police just bobbing, watching them. Obviously, it's all white kids, so like that probably makes a difference. But I was like, what? is going on? There's clearly underage drinking happening. Why aren't you like doing anything about it?
Oh my God, they're so powerful that even the cops.
They're so powerful.
They're so powerful.
Intervene.
They are absolutely terrifying.
Oh my God. It was crazy. Well, this isn't that many teens. It's like six of them, though. But yeah, like we said, even two is too many. Yeah, so.
Six is a lot, I would say.
And they have a vibe similar to what you were just describing. They're blasting music. They have a big Rottweiler dog with them that's barking and not on a leash. And it comes in. It's like barking in Jenny's face. It's a pretty scary dog. And they ask them to turn their music down.
Oh, no.
Which you just can't do. You can't do it.
You cannot do it.
You got to just leave. You got to exit the premises.
You have to leave.
Oh, there is a moment in the hotel from the night before where the like people in the room next to them are screaming at each other, and Jenny tells Steve, like, can you go tell them to keep it down? And she's kind of joking about it, but then she makes a comment like, are you a man or a mouse? And so I think that's maybe
spurring some of this
in Steve's mind now, that he's got to stand up for himself and his girlfriend. And so he's like, I won't be bullied by these teens. But sir, yes, you will. Yes, you will.
Yeah, good fucking luck. You always will.
So, of course, you know, they are not turning their music down. They're being little shits. The music is so loud that the main guy, played by Jack O'Connell, who I really love Jack O'Connell, but he's plays a real shitty teen in this movie. And he's saying like, what? Can't hear you. Can't hear you. The music's too loud, bruv.
Bruv.
So Steve gives up, obviously defeated. He's no match for these teens. And they're trying to have a good time, but obviously it's the time's ruined. This is no fun at all. I'll describe a little bit of the other teens. So Jack O'Connell is the main one. His name is Brett. He's clearly the ringleader, the one they all seem to be kind of deferring to. There's also one girl in the group. Her name is Paige.
Now, see, Paige is the right name for the one girl in a group of guys.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yep. That's right. It works.
Every Paige I knew growing up was like a guy's girl.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something to think about.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It is. It's pretty interesting when you think about it.
I don't have the other kids' names down except for there's one that looks younger than the rest. So his name is Cooper. They're looking at Jenny in binoculars, just making them uncomfortable. And they stay the whole day, and they, again, ruin the whole day and eventually leave. And they walk like almost on top of their towels. They like walk so close to them as they're leaving. And Jenny and Steve are looking at them. And Paige is like, you want to take a photo? It'll last longer.
God, that was perfect.
So they're gone. And phew, they're gone. So Steve and Jenny bring out their fucking tent, and I'm like, oh my God, we're camping. No, 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 no.
What?
We're camping at this lakeside. So they set up camp. They make their little fire.
Oh no.
I'm really not happy to see this.
Me either.
It's nighttime now. They're in the tent. Making out. Then they hear a little noise. Steve goes out to check it out, and we hear a weird noise, like a groaning noise.
Oh God.
And Jenny says, like, Steve, stop it. Like, you're freaking me out. And then it's quiet for a while. And then there's footsteps coming closer to the tent, and she's saying, you know, Steve, stop. Like, you're freaking me out. Tent unzips. Steve barges in laughing. Ha, I got you so good.
Okay. No. I hate that. That is not okay.
I don't like pranks.
Okay. No, not when you're camping.
And not when you've had such a day with teenagers.
Yeah, not when they're hostile teens.
We'll see who has the last laugh, Steve.
Indeed we will. But we make it through the first night okay. Wake up in the morning. Their food, they did not... It seems like they didn't even try to put their food in a food safe container. It's covered in ants and bugs, so all their food now is ruined. So they got to go into town, which is a couple miles away. They go into a diner to get breakfast, and the waitress, Steve asks the waitress, "Have you seen this group of kids? We saw them by the lake yesterday. They were a little rowdy," and she laughs it off and is like, "Oh yeah, those darn kids." And he's like, "Well, they were actually like a little I don't know, I can't remember what he says, but like their parents might want to know about this thing that they did or something." And the waitress gets weirdly defensive about it, and she's like, "They're not my kids." And he's like, no, I'm not saying that. I just like, if their parents wanted to know, they were I don't know if they were smoking weed or something. Like, he's like trying to tattle on them, essentially. And this waitress is not having it. And it's like, "They're not my kids. I don't know what you want me to do about it." And it is a really weird
also
encounter.
Fair. It's a waitress at a diner. Like, how would she, is it supposed to be this is an extremely small town where this woman would know their parents?
I think it is a pretty small town. And it's just, she goes from laughing and bubbly to like extremely pissed off really quickly.
Interesting.
And it like sours the rest of their interaction. And it's like the moment of like, "Oh, we were having a fun convo and now you don't like us anymore." And so it's just a strange interaction. And so they're driving back to the campsite now when they pass the house where they see one of the kids like walking behind the house. So they've tracked down that this is, or they see that this is the house of Brett. Steve stops. Jenny is saying, "No, Steve, come on.
Steve, you idiot."
It's really quite crazy. He walks up to the house, knocks on the door. Nobody answers. He opens it and walks in.
What?
Really crazy move here, Steve. Making a lot of mistakes. Just because she said, "Are you a man or a mouse?" doesn't mean you go breaking and entering into strange people's houses.
No.
I did spot a fire poker in this scene. Does not come into use, unfortunately, but damn. I've always got an eye out for them.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes in, and as he's calling out and trying to say, hello, is anybody home? You don't do this. You just simply don't do this.
Yeah, you are breaking and entering.
Yeah. And as he's deep in the house, a truck pulls into the driveway. Their dad is arriving home, and he's like, "Oh, shit, and runs upstairs.
What did he think was going to happen?
To hide? I don't know. I don't know.
Sorry. Yeah, no, it's nuts.
It's not a good plan. And so he's now trying to climb out the window of Brett's room. You can like see photos. This is Brett's room. And outside of the window, Brett and all his shitty little friends are playing in the yard. And so he's got the dad coming up the stairs because he's heard someone, you know, walking around in the room, and he's about to yell at, he's thinking it's Brett. And Steve is dangling himself out of this window to try to get out before the dad gets up there. And all the rest of the teens are just out of like 20 feet away from him, that if they turn their heads, they're going to see him. And he jumps off the roof, makes it back to the car, narrowly escaping being caught by anybody.
Okay.
Really?
Can't even imagine getting myself into that kind of pickle.
Nope.
So, okay. So now we are driving back to the lake, and is Steve's scuba diving? He's brought scuba gear. That kind of threw me. So he's scuba diving now.
What kind of lake is this?
Yeah.
It's pretty big, but I wouldn't think there'd be too much to see in it. It's still a lake. It's not, you know.
He just loves to swim deep.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he's practicing for the real thing.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, yeah. Feels like a pretty weird proposal trip.
And he, yes, as he gets out, we see him kind of get in the ring, and he's saying it's crazy, the stuff that you can find on the bottom of the lake.
I see. That's and weird.
He's got this interesting proposal plan, and he's about to pop the question when Jenny says, where's the beach bag? She's looking around, and their bag is missing. Steve puts the ring away, says, what? Our phones and car keys and wallet are in that bag. They get up, they look, their car is gone. And so now they're kind of running through the forest again to get to the main road, and the car almost hits them. Brett is flooring their own car at them. Truly murder attempt here with their car. They like jump out of the way.
Whoa.
Then they follow the direction that the car is going. It's getting to be nighttime again. And they track down the group of teens to another part of the lake where they're having a bonfire, blasting music again. Steve and Jenny walk up and say, we don't want any trouble, man. Can we just get our bag back? Brett says, what? I don't know what you're talking about, mate. it ain't us. Like, you got the wrong person. And he's wearing sunglasses. It's nighttime. Steve says, are those my sunglasses? He's like, nah, mate. They're mine.
Oh, God. What about their car? Do they say, like, we saw you driving our car?
They don't say that, but they're saying, like, we know that you took our bag. Just give it back. And the dog's barking and tensions are mounting. He's just saying, come on, man, just like give us back our bag. Jenny's saying, Steve, let's just drop it. Let's just go. Steve is, you know, stepping closer to Brett saying, come on, man, like just give us our stuff. Somebody shut that dog up. And Steve is now getting a little bit more in Brett's face. Brett is stepping closer to Steve. We're getting in each other's face. One of the other kids pulls a knife, like a little switchblade. And Steve sees it and like grabs his wrist and is trying to like shake the knife free when the dog jumps and attacks them, and the knife stabs through the dog's jaw, kills the dog.
Oh shit.
So it was an accident, but now the dog is dead.
Steve
is saying, I'm so sorry, give me the car keys back, I'll drive you guys to the vet right now. Dog's already dead.
Oh shit.
He sees the bag. Steve like sees the bag somewhere, I think, grabs it, and Brett is crying and screaming, you killed my fucking dog.
It's really good, Sammy. It's really good.
And Steve and Jenny make a run for it. They grab the bag, they see the car and get into it, but it's nighttime and they're in the middle of the woods. So they're driving fast, but it seems so dangerous because he can't see well enough in front of him. And so eventually they crash into a tree. And Steve gets barricaded into his seat, like a branch like crashes through the window, basically pinning him into the truck. And so he tells Jenny, he's like, you've got to run, go get help. And because the teens are running, chasing them, like screaming, you fuckers, fucking assholes. And so Jenny gets out and she runs, but they're too close that they'll be able to see her. So she hides in some roots and like covers herself up.
Oh, God.
Jesus.
And I guess stays there overnight because it cuts to morning of her coming out of her hiding spot.
What? Did she fall asleep?
I don't know.
She's like,
I'm so comfy in these sticks and leaves.
And so we didn't see what happened to Steve. We just cut. Oof.
And so now she's hearing the teens and she's following the sound of their voices. This is where I'm starting to yell, Jenny, you dumb bitch, go get help. Like he said, what have you been doing sleeping all night? Just kind of a weird decision here on Jenny's part. But she follows the sounds of their voices and she's hidden behind a tree and peering around and seeing all of them. We've got Steve tied up with barbed wire. He's bleeding. Ooh. They've clearly been, you know, punching him and he's not looking good. And the teens are in various states of anger and fear. Like some of them are like, we can't do this, man. Come on. This is like too, we're going too far, Brett. And Brett and Paige are the most like pissed off and unwavering in their like, no, we're like fucking this guy up. That's our plan. And so the other kids are trying to convince them to let him go. Brett says the second we let him go, he's calling the cops and we're all going to be in deep shit. So we can't let him go.
So what's the plan? You're going to kill him.
Teens are also so stupid. Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
okay, now what?
Yeah. The other kids are trying to leave then if they can't let Steve go. And Brett won't let them leave and is saying, no, we're all in this together. And to ensure that,
oh God,
he makes each of them stab Steve while he films it. Paige films each of the other kids filming or stabbing Steve as blackmail, essentially, to be like, if you don't see through this to the end, you're going to be fucked. So it starts with one of the guys crying and does like a very small little slice with the knife. And he's like, no, mate, that's not enough. And like makes them like really stab him.
Where?
Jenny's watching this. First in the arm. Someone stabs him in the leg. And then the last one, the youngest guy, Cooper, is really crying and like really doesn't want to do it. And for some reason, he has a box cutter instead. Like one of the guys pulls out a box cutter and is like also not hesitating about it. There's a one guy that doesn't seem to be too worried about stabbing him. He pulls out his own box cutter, gives Cooper the box cutter, and they're just like yelling at it, Cooper, come on, you have to stab him.
Oh my God.
Cooper stabs him in the mouth. In the
what?
Open mouth.
What? Why?
Really? Shocking. I just didn't see that coming.
Ugh. What?
As he's like crying, yeah, he's like not happy about it, but it's like, Cooper, why'd you choose that spot? Really crazy, but he's clearly like very panicked. And so now we're all in it. There's no good way out of this. Jenny is watching all of this happen. She stands there while he's stabbed 4 times. I'm yelling, Jenny, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Go get help. She does something that I don't quite understand, which is she has one of the phones and Steve has his phone, I guess. They each have their phones. And she like connects to his phone using Bluetooth to call 999. Which I don't know why. Like maybe she didn't have reception. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably a reason this happens and it just didn't make sense to me.
Okay.
So she's trying to call 999 from his phone, but it rings and Brett sees it and says like, oh, Bluetooth connection, like she's here somewhere, like everybody spread out and like go try to find her. She runs, they all run after her. They get on bikes, and so they see her running and they're chasing her on bikes, and it doesn't seem good. She's not going to obviously be able to outrun them. And she kind of jumps on this little hill and throws a branch in front of them, causing them all to crash. They're all going pretty fast, so that's good. She gets a little bit of a gap to run from them. And she makes it to a clearing where there's a park ranger service station type thing. Nobody's there, but there's a walkie-talkie inside of this little station. And so she's trying to get into there to get to the walkie-talkie, but the room is locked. She's trying to like squeeze in between the chain on the door, but it's too small. She can't reach the walkie-talkie. And now the kids are back chasing her again. And she is able to hide from them by climbing on top of this little service station. I don't know how she did it without them noticing, but she did. So they don't know where she is now. They've lost her, and they continue on to go look for her. So she's able to gather herself. But meanwhile, Steve has been left alone, and he is able to break free from the barbed wire. He's bloodied, stabbed, like bleeding from his mouth and all his stab wounds. And he makes it back to their car where they crashed. And there's a first aid kit in the back. And so he grabs that. He grabs a tire iron as a weapon.
Pretty good weapon.
He, you know, sits down next to a tree and starts tending to his wounds. And then one of the teens comes back to where he was tied up, sees that he's not there, calls Brett and says he's fucking gone. They're like, we have to find him. Everyone like run and find, like spread out, see where they we need to find them both. They cannot get out of here. Now Jenny's running what she thinks is the opposite direction. That's the other thing, is like, it's the woods. So, and yeah, she's unfamiliar with this territory. Mm. And so who's to say what direction the road is? It's very hard to orient yourself. And so she's running just where she thinks she should run. And she's running very fast. And we see one of the teenagers running, looking for Steve, and Steve is like hearing him running. And as these footsteps turn the corner, Steve just swings that tire iron hard. And it's Jenny, but he doesn't hit her. Shit. Thank God.
Okay.
But he almost it does. But now they're together.
And he's like, great, where's the help you called?
Yeah, that thing I told you to do hours ago.
You did seem to use your phone to do something, and it wasn't to call for help.
She's like, sorry, I took a little nap. She's like, yeah, I was
so
asleep.
Tired. You get it.
I just took a little nap.
Really tired. So she's, you know, helping carry him. They're kind of limping away, and they find a little shack on the water. They go inside. This is a very dilapidated shack, barely standing, and she locks the door behind them, which made me laugh, because it's just like essentially looks like you could blow this little shack down, the huff and puff, and blow it right down.
Yeah.
But so they're in there. I think they have the first aid kit, and she pulls back his shirt to see his wounds. So I think one of them stabbed him in the side as well. And it looks really bad. It's like black blood. And he sees it and is like, fuck, fuck, fuck. He's like, I'm dying. Like, I'm dying. I'm bleeding out. I'm dying.
Oh, God.
And she's like, no, you're not. I need you to like stay with me. And she's bandaging him up best as she can, but it does look like a really extremely deep stab wound. Oh. And he's losing consciousness a bit, like he's losing a lot of blood. And as she's wrapping him, she finds the engagement ring in his pocket. Mm. She feels it and pulls it out. And he says, you know, I thought we would maybe go to Africa for our honeymoon. And, you know, they just have this moment of crying, and she puts the ring on and she's like, no, like, we're still going to do that. Like, you just stay with me.
Oh.
We hear the teens approaching and they say something like, in that shack over there, like they know where they must be hiding. They are coming fast, and it's seeming like we're fucked. There's like nowhere for them to go. But the teens open the door to the shack and it's empty. And we see that they have essentially popped one of the floorboards up and gone underneath the shack into the lake. And so it's like at the shallow, you know, edge of the edge of the lake, but they're in this like nasty fucking water now.
I do not like to think about these open wounds in a lake.
And he's definitely losing going in and out of consciousness. She's holding his head above water, but he keeps slumping down.
Oof. This is so sad.
There's like a tense moment of one of the kids' feet crashes through the floorboard, because again, this place is very rickety, and it seems like they're gonna look under there, but then they don't. So the teens leave, like, okay, we gotta keep looking for him. They run away. So now Jenny drags Steve onto the shore. Again, it's like muddy, filthy.
Ew. I don't like it when things get dirty. I just don't.
Yeah.
Don't like that.
And he's still clinging on to life, but just barely. And she covers him up with branches and she says, like, I'm going to go get help. I need you to.
Oh, now you're going to go get help?
Yeah, now's not the best time. Best time would have been, I don't know, last night while you were sleeping for some reason.
What the fuck? I can't get over that part.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. Maybe it was like not as much time.
Maybe she like passed out, or maybe she like hit her head or something.
Maybe
like
she hit her head. Maybe she passed out, or maybe it was like 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. in the morning, and maybe it was like the sun is coming up. I don't know. But
okay.
Regardless, even while they're just all stabbing him, that could have been a good time to run for help as well.
Yeah, I would have liked that.
So at some point, Steve had told her to follow the power lines. We can see some power lines above. He says you should be able to follow those to some sort of
smart.
People will be at the end, and so she's just running as fast as she fucking can along these power lines. And we see a big pointy rock in the foreground right in her path. And of course her foot plunges on it. It goes straight through. She screams so loud, all the teens can hear it. She's screaming and screaming and screaming. I'm saying, shut the fuck
shut
up.
Oh
my God. Shut the fuck up, Jenny Greengrass.
Jenny!
So now all the teens, they're far enough away that they're not like right there, but they're all running in her direction now. And she tumbles down this little hill and finds a little spot to hide. She, by the way, started off in this cute little sundress, floral, brightly colored sundress that is now absolutely filthy, disgusting, muddy. She's muddy and bloody, and she's trying to pull this rock out of her foot.
Oh, it's in her foot still.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh.
Because of the shape of the rock, she can't pull it down the way that it came, like because
she has to keep going.
Yep. So she has to pull it out the top of her foot.
Holy shit. That is a sharp pointy rock.
Yeah, it almost looks like an arrowhead or something. I don't know if it's something to do with the ranger station or something, but it's, oof, it looks extremely painful. And she's not being quiet about it still, and I'm getting angry. But she gets it out, and she keeps running. You know, impressive. It must hurt a lot. And she runs into Adam, the kid from the beginning, who's probably about 12. She's looks terrifying now. And she's like, Adam, please. Like, I need help. Adam looks really scared. It's like, oh, my God, what? She's like, please take me to I need to talk to your mom.
No, you need to talk to the police.
He says his mom is picking him up. And she's like, no, we should
why
be fall.
Why is this kid just roaming through the woods days in a row?
I don't know. And she tells him, I feel like we should be following the power lines because he's walking down a weird little path. And he tells her, no, this is a shortcut. This is a shortcut. We're getting
Don't believe him.
Not good vibes.
No.
And she's getting suspicious and is saying, Adam, where are you taking me? Are you sure your mom's coming here? How is she going to get here? He has a phone and she's trying to grab it from him. He says, it doesn't have service. But then it rings and she's again trying to grab it from him. But then the teens arrive. Adam has called them.
Adam!
And there's some mention of him like wanting to be in their crew and he needs to do some sort of initiation thing to prove himself to be able to hang with them. She's panicking and tries to turn and run, but one of the teens is behind her and punches her, knocks her out. Cut to black.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Here we go. We all knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. So now she wakes up, tied up, covered in branches and twigs, like in a bonfire type arrangement. Steve is tied up behind her. He is dead.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
And they are pouring gasoline all over both of them.
Oh, my God. Kay. Oh, my God. This escalated so badly.
Really
this
badly.
This is why you can't ask teens to turn down the music.
Never do it. Cautionary tale.
You really can't do it.
You really can't. It's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
They will literally light you on fire.
They're going to light you on fire. If you ask a teen to turn down the music, they're going to light you on fire.
So, again, Paige is filming all of this because now some of the ones that have already been filmed stabbing him are again saying, we can't do this. This is crazy. We need to let her go. She's alive, man. We can't fucking burn her alive. Paige is filming it saying this is happening. We're all implicated. This is the only option. And they make Adam light the match.
Oh my God.
This is his initiation thing, and they make him light them on fire.
Adam, you really want to be friends with these guys?
Yeah, no,
yeah, Adam, come on. So it goes up in flames. Steve goes up in flames first. They're all gagging at the smell of it.
Ugh.
But in the fire, it because it starts on the side Steve is, it, I don't know, loosens or burns some of her restraints in a way that she's able to break free. And she just fucking runs. Brett calls out after her, if you run, I'm going to kill Adam.
What?
Jenny keeps running. I'm sorry,
Adam,
but
did
I would
try
do the
to
same
light
thing.
Her on fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sorry, Adam.
And Brett starts pouring gasoline on Adam.
What the fuck?
Puts a tire over his neck and lights him on fire. And Jenny sees this. She throws up, but she keeps running.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's no helping. Oh, Adam, that is so sad.
Fuck. Brett is really bad.
Really
bad. He's a really bad teen.
Brett is really bad. she finds this clearing where there's like a map of, you know, like a at the trailhead type thing. There's a map of the whole forest. She smashes the glass, pulls the map out so she can figure out where the fuck she is. And she hears them approaching again. They're chasing after her. She turns and looks for a hiding place and sees a, I don't know what it even, it essentially just looks like a trash can filled with shit. I feel like it's some sort of like, I don't know, shit trash can.
sure.
No other way to say it.
I don't know what it is, because it's like just kind of freestanding in the middle right next to this trailhead. Seems like a weird place to put that. Like, maybe you'd think like, it's like a sewage thing, but it looks like above ground and not connected to anything. So it's like where people, it's as if it would be like where people dispose of dog poop, but it's a human sized filled with shit receptacle. So Jenny dives right in there. God bless her. Closes the top, is covered head to toe in shit. And the descent music is blaring. And she's got her like little eyes poking out of the shitty water. And I'm like, oh my God, this is even like the descent, the scene where she like comes out of the blood.
I'd rather come out of blood than shit.
It's shit and adolescent boys instead of cave monsters.
I don't see much of a difference.
True. And so they see that she's gotten the map. They like are hot on her trail, but they don't find her in the shit bucket. And they keep moving. And she gets out and goes over to all the broken glass from where the map was and wraps, like rips part of her dress off to make a little handle and finally makes this weapon. I'm thinking, yes, good girl, Jenny. I love to see it. And as she's got her weapon, there's a little mirror on this trailhead thing that says the most dangerous animal in the forest. It's a mirror showing us that it's man. And in this case, Jenny looking
real bad,
really bad, covered in shit. And we see Cooper approaching, looking like so upset. He really does not want to be in this situation. And he sees her and he calls out to her and says, Miss. And we're thinking like he's going to help her. And she just turns around and stabs him in the neck, kills him.
Cooper's dead. Fucking God.
Well, yeah. I mean, she just saw them light a kid on fire who was alive.
Yeah. And she did see this kid stab her fiance in the mouth.
In the mouth, yeah.
So.
And as Cooper's dying, he's really coughing and coughing and coughing. And I'm like, everyone needs to shut the fuck up in this movie. And so the other teens hear it, obviously. And she runs and it's getting dark now. They find Cooper's body. They're furious, calling out, we're gonna fucking kill you, bitch. And
you already were. This is kind of an empty threat at this point. It's like, you can't escalate past lighting me on fire.
Yeah. Yep.
I get it. You're gonna kill me. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's why I'm running. And she, because she has the map, she's able to more efficiently run out to the road. And a car is approaching. She runs in front of the car. It stops. It's like a guy in his 20s. And he's like, oh my God, are you okay? And she's panicking, looks insane, saying, I need to get to town. I need to get in town. Need help. And he says, okay. Come in. And they start driving. And she's like, town's the other way. You need to go back the other direction. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go back. But my little brother's out here and like, he's not answering his phone. like, I gotta find him. I think he's up here. Like, and we have a meeting spot where if his phone dies, I have to get him at this meeting spot. Oh. Jenny's, of course, putting two and two together, looking nervous, but being quiet about it. And they pull up to this meeting spot, and out comes Brett and the other, Paige and the other teens. And the older brother gets out of the car and walks over to them like, "Mom's so mad. Like, what are you doing?" And Jenny just slips right into that driver's seat.
There we go.
Turns the car around, floors it.
I'm thinking if I were her, I might have fucking stabbed that guy. Mm-hmm. And just been like, "Get out of the car."
Yeah.
Nice that she didn't have to.
But she is flooring it. And Paige runs like in front of the car to like stop her, and she plows through Paige.
Yeah, man.
Paige dead. She drives until she comes to a house where a big party's happening. There's like 30 or so people having a party, and she just like gets out of the car, runs, like drops to her knees in the middle of this fun looking party, and is like, "Somebody help me."
Oh my God. Oh.
Everybody turns, looks, music stops. Oh my God. Everyone runs to her. These women are like, get her on the couch and are like wiping her off, like trying to calm her down. And
I am so anxious about whose house this is.
Asking what happened.
Why would you stop driving? You got to get the fuck out of here. Get away from all these people.
I know.
You probably just killed some of these people's children.
Yeah, that's would have been a good thought to have.
Oh, no.
Because sure enough, as she's kind of looking around the house, we see pictures of Brett on the walls.
Oh my God. Oh,
we're back in Brett's house.
I hate this.
And one of the women helping her looks a lot like Paige, but older. And she sees Brett's dad that we saw earlier, and he's getting a phone call, and he's going, "What? God. What? Slow down. What? What happened? Tell me what happened."
No.
And she sits up and tells the women that are helping her, I need to go to the bathroom. And they show her where the bathroom is, and she goes into the bathroom. She gets there's like a straight razor in there. She grabs that. There's no window in this bathroom. She's like looking for any escape. There's nothing. So she just braces her as she's hearing yelling now happening and like a scream happening, like, "Oh my God, what? Oh my God." And like crying happening outside the door.
Oh my God.
Then there's like banging on the door, like, "Get out here. Get the fuck out here." She's just standing there with the razor as they break the door down. Brett is now there, and one of the other kids, I think, too. And it's clear that they've told all the adults here that that Paige is dead, that Cooper is dead. Jenny starts yelling like, they killed my boyfriend. They killed Steve. Brett's dad is saying, "They told me all about Steve, what he did to the kids, and like, I know what they did. I know what your boyfriend did." So clearly they've lied to cover their tracks. And so
we've got footage, though, although maybe it died with Paige.
Yeah. And everyone's freaking out. And one of the moms, I think it's Paige's mom, is like sobbing and saying, "They're just children. They're children. And Jenny is taking this in. She is a teacher. We've seen that previously would have thought to protect all children, but she
now knows better.
the dad is hitting Brett now and being like, how could you let this happen? We're seeing some abuse happening there. Brett's dad is saying, like, we can't call the cops. Like, we have to deal with this ourselves. Otherwise, our kids are, like, going to be in jail, or, like, we can't let this get out. Jenny's screaming, like, what are you talking about? Like, call the police, call the police. Brett's dad says, Brett, go upstairs. Close the door. As he, like, grabs Jenny. Jenny swipes her little straight razor, like, slices his arm and falls to the ground. I'm like, Jenny.
Oh, my God.
No more weapon. As she's being pulled back into the bathroom, we just hear screaming, and now we're following Brett as he walks into his room, closes the door. We hear screaming. He pulls out the phone, deletes all the videos, delete. Pulls out the Steve's sunglasses that he stole, puts them on, looks at himself in the mirror with this kind of blank expression. That's the end of the movie.
Oh my fucking God.
I hated it. You're right. I'm in a cold sweat right now. Cold sweat.
That's a really interesting ending, though, because it does make him seem like a child.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does. Mm-hmm. It really does.
Like, and that, of course, he comes from an abusive home, because a child wouldn't do that if they didn't. But it's also like he made children stab a man, and he also lit people on fire. So he's really unforgivable shit. But at the end of the day, he's just a kid who like wanted sunglasses and got way out of hand. Because you're stupid. Because you're so fucking stupid when you're a teen.
That's what I really like about this movie, is just like a situation just escalating feels so possible. Like, this is, I like a horror movie that is possible. Like,
yeah,
this could happen.
And like moment to moment, these, you know, teens make really stupid decisions all the time without realizing the stakes. And if they like keep getting put in higher and higher stakes situations, and all they're trying to do is like get moment to moment, because that's the only thing teenagers can do, is like think about like, well, it's just, what do I do right now?
Yes.
And that you would just like keep, like, that feeling of like, we're in it now. We have to kill them. Like, we have to kill them. There's something else to do, because you're too stupid to realize like you could actually just not kill them.
Yes.
And it would be a lot better than if you continue to move forward and kill them.
Yeah. I remember when I was in high school having this escalating situation, not to this degree, obviously.
Thank God.
But it was me and a friend, and we were playing a game where it was like a variation of hide and seek, I guess. And somehow it ended with one of us, I think she locked me outside, and then it just got like mean, and she wouldn't let me back in. And we were like seeing each other through the sliding door. And I saw that her stuff was outside where I was, and my stuff was inside where she was. Okay. And so we just started fucking ruining each other's shit. I like grabbed her textbooks and was like ripping pages out of her textbooks and like ripping her backpack. And she was ripping all of my shit, and we're both like sobbing. And I like, so it just escalated to this like horrible level that ended with me calling my mom and be like, pick me up. Like, I want to come home. All my stuff is like ruined.
Yeah. The fact that you wouldn't have thought to call your mom before you guys started ruining each other's stuff, like, right, is kind of the point that it, yeah. When you're a teenager, you're like, you're a hormone monster. You truly are. You're like you have no lived experience. You are fully just emotion and like physical discomfort.
Yep.
And that is the only thing driving you. Oh, God. How fucking scary. Holy shit.
That said, I did enjoy this movie. I will say that
it was surprising for sure.
Yeah.
I did not see that ending coming.
Yeah, it is surprising. I kind of did see the ending coming, only because I had heard that this movie is like feel bad. So I was like, well, it's not going to have a we're not going to have a happy ending here. And, but I will say that as far as the broken Britain messaging here, I feel like this is not really the...
It's like maybe a little problematic.
Yeah. Like I feel like it just is heaping on this demonization of...
Like, yeah, we, of they are working. This bad. We should feel this way. Look at them.
Right.
They'll fucking kill you in the woods.
Yeah. Right. Like working class people as like dangerous, just violent...
More movies like Funny Games where it's the rich people who are. I take it back. I don't want it. I don't want more.
So as far as like broken Britain themed horror movies, Attack the Block did it better.
Attack the Block did it better. God, I can't wait for Attack the Block 2. Holy shit.
I know. I want it. So that's Eden Lake.
Yeah. I mean, this was not fun.
No. It's feel bad. Feel bad for sure. Feel bad for sure.
And yeah, kind of a weird one to pair with the announcement of the Troubled Teen docuseries that
I know. It is actually, I was thinking about that.
I actually think it does sort of tie in because it feels like what the ending of this movie lets us know is how vulnerable teenagers are.
Because it is such a volatile time in life for everybody. I hated being a teenager.
It was awful.
It was a really dark time. And the answer is not to abuse your kids, obviously. The answer is not to
send your kids away. Right, because it's this like deeply, deeply vulnerable time because you have the brain of a child, but all of a sudden you're like becoming an adult. You're like treated by the outside world as an adult in many ways. You like want to fuck people and that you're not ready for that. It's like, yeah, it's so precarious. The fact that like any of us survive that, we all have to if you're going to become an adult. And you can see how easy it is for shit to go like really wrong. And we need, as scary as teens are, we gotta do it. We gotta do a better job with them so that they'll be less scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's the adult's responsibility to be the good, set a good standard for the teens. And you can't just ship teens away. Obviously, nothing good happens when teens are in the woods. So let's not
ship the woods, I think, importantly.
I was talking to my friend that has a teenage daughter, almost two teenage daughters. One of them's 12. One of them's 15, and it's been a tough time for him.
Yeah.
And he said some advice that he got was to make yourself always available for your kids without telling them that you are, just like being there. But you have to be visible and invisible at the same time because they like want nothing to do with you, but they will want
they
to like
to
know
that, safe.
That you're there and that it's safe. And so... they are going to act out, and that's like normal teenage behavior. And you have to accept that that's part of it. I mean, I guess I won't pretend to know how to raise a teenager. It sounds extremely hard, but
that's so scary. Oh my God. I started like hyperventilating. I don't have children. And I just was like, oh God. Oh no. Oh God. How do you do it? Henley, are you okay?
I feel like I'm just going to be in denial that it'll happen to me until it happens. Do you know what I mean?
And
like,
by
I'm going to be
been
like
a parent for, you know, that many more years.
Maybe it'll be okay. And then obviously it won't be. But yeah, I think that also just putting yourself in situations where you can communicate without looking at each other. So like driving, walking, doing any kind of activities where you're like,
be willing to embarrass them, I think, by like giving them educational books about like, I had like this book that my parents gave me about bodies that I was like, ugh, don't, ew, shut up. But I would read that book all the time.
That's so funny.
Just being like, you got to embarrass them a little bit for their benefit.
Mm-hmm. And somehow just not take anything personally. Just never take it personally.
Yes, that's an important one.
That is hard. That
is hard.
Because
they're going to
hurt your feelings. Say really mean stuff.
They are so mean. They are so mean.
And you can't hold it against them.
Most importantly, just simply never tell them to turn their music down.
It never is, tell them to turn their music down.
No, like, we are joking, but also kind of not. That it's not worth it. Just let them play their music really loud.
Let them play their music.
Like, let them have it, you know? It's a hard time. And just let them play their music too loud.
Yep.
Holy moly.
I have a lot to think about. I have a lot.
We've learned an important lesson here today.
Wow.
Teens are scary, but they are children, and they are going to play their music at the volume they want.
It's the least we can do for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep. Okay, and I can't believe I forgot to tell you guys something really important, which is that James Watkins, the director of this movie, is going to be directing the Speak No Evil remake.
Oh, what? I forgot they were doing that. Man, so this guy likes to feel bad, huh? He really likes to have a very bad time.
He's good at making us feel bad.
I hate him.
And that's why we love him.
I mean, I guess know your strengths, you know?
I knew that I shouldn't have been too excited about there being so many tongues in this movie, all properly attached.
Yeah, he was like, there might be tongues now, but later.
You just wait, bitch. They're going.
That was his biggest note after doing this movie. He was like, wait a minute.
Get rid of the tongues.
Too many tongues.
I stabbed inside a mouth, but the tongue stayed put.
Tongue remained.
That was a mistake. Were I to do it again, I would take that tongue right out.
Oh my God.
I'm very curious about the remake because the cast is very good, but also American remakes tend to be unnecessary.
Sure. Is it like in production?
It's a strange choice.
Yes, it's supposed to come out this year.
Oh my God.
Remind us of the cast of
James McAvoy, Mackenzie Davis, and Scoot McNairy.
Whoa. All right. So, okay. That is interesting.
But I feel like because Speak No Evil has such a, there's part of the, a significant part of the plot is their language barrier and cultural differences, and these are all
British.
You know, it's going to be all English speaking. So I hope that they are at least have some culture differences, like one of the families is from Canada or British or something. Because I feel like that's
a huge part of it, is that they're like, they're just different from us. Because, well, I mean, I guess.
Right. They have to be like, oh, they do things differently in Canada, which they do.
Sure.
They do healthcare better.
Not that differently. All I got to say is I don't want to sit through that shit again.
I know.
No, we're not doing it. We will not be doing
it. It's funny because it's like, oh, I feel like I want to do it, but it's also going to be the same movie again.
Same movie. I mean, you can see it.
Maybe we can do a little mini. You can tell you the differences.
Well, you can watch it and you can say whether it's worth doing.
Yep, yep.
Okay. And if it's worth doing, I'll fucking do it. I'll do it, you guys.
Oh my God, Henley.
True, if they change a lot of stuff, then
they cut out more tongues, we'll have to do it.
Yeah.
More tongues, more stonings. Like, yeah, let's do it. Oh, man.
So yeah, we have that to look forward to.
Yeah.
So much.
Wow. Okay. Huge news. Hate to see it. What are you gonna do? I'm gonna try to forget about all of this instantly.
Me too.
That's
same,
my goal
same, same, same.
For the rest of the day.
Gone. Poof. Eden Lake never heard of it.
Wowzer.
All okay. right. Well, we have an accent to do here.
Yeah, bruv.
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 From all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch, bruv.
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 Hey, goodbye. Goodbye,
cheers.
Bruv.
Cheers.
Cheers, bruv.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, bruv.
Cheers, bruv. That was so good. We did it. We made it. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch.
If you enjoy the show, please remember to subscribe and rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. 5 stars only, or we will haunt you.
And if you simply can't get enough of us, we have good news for you. We have lots of bonus content available on our Patreon at patreon.com/tsdwpodcast.
You'll get access to video trailer reactions, 2 bonus episodes a month, the power to vote for upcoming episodes, and more.
And last but not least, you can follow us on social media at tsdwpodcast.
We'll be back next week with a new episode.
We love you.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.